All right. Well, there's a lot less of you than usual, which is good for me. I'm very much an introvert, if you didn't know. I've been called a hermit, a cave dweller one time. I've been called an eccentric vagabond. I like talking like one-on-one with people more so than in groups. Even like groups of four, five, six is not my favorite. I listen to everybody really well, which I know all y'all pretty good, but it's still a big crowd to me. Let me not bang on that. So this message is really for me. Maybe you feel similar to some things I'll say. Hopefully you'll, maybe we can get something out of it. But yeah, like I said, these are things that really apply to me, and I'm preaching to myself more than anybody else. So I'm going to go ahead and share my screen somehow. There it is. Yep, so we're still going through the book of Matthew and stopping wherever we see that it might be fulfilled. So there are prophecies that were fulfilled by Jesus. We're coming to this next one. So we'll get into it. Gets this next one is in Matthew chapter 21. And that's the main verse, but I'll read some more from the chapter. Now when they drew near Jerusalem and came to Bethphage at the Mount of Olives, then Jesus sent two disciples, saying to them, "Go into the village opposite you, and immediately you will find a donkey tied and a colt with her. Loose them and bring them to me. And if anyone says anything to you, you shall say, 'The Lord has need of them,' and immediately he will send them." All this was done that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by the prophet, saying, "Tell the daughter of Zion, behold, your king is coming to you, lowly and sitting on a donkey, a colt, the foal of a donkey." So the disciples went and did just as Jesus commanded them. They brought the donkey and the colt, laid their clothes on them, and set him on them. And a very, very great multitude spread their clothes on the road. Others cut down branches from the trees and spread them on the road. Then the multitudes who went before and those who followed cried out, saying, "Hosanna to the Son of David. Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Hosanna in the highest." And when he had come into Jerusalem, all the city was moved, saying, "Who is this?" So the multitude said, "This is Jesus, the prophet from Nazareth of Galilee." So, the thing that was fulfilled was this prophecy that we see, "Tell the daughter of Zion, behold, her king is coming to you, lowly and sitting on a donkey, a colt, the foal of a donkey." Comes from Zechariah chapter 9, verse 9. "Rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout, O daughter of Jerusalem. Behold, her king is coming to you. He is just and having salvation, lowly and riding on a donkey, a colt, the foal of a donkey." All right, so, if you're wondering how what I said a minute ago about like this message being to me, about being preaching this to myself, and how what it has to do with this verse, we're going to talk about donkeys. So, yeah, donkeys are actually pretty cool. There's a lot, actually, a lot of similarities between donkeys and us, in a lot of ways. And there's a lot of verses about donkeys that also are kind of like a parallel to us. So I'm not trying to over-spiritualize donkeys, like they're just animals, but just running with this kind of donkey theme going on. A little bit about donkeys. They're used around the world as a pack and work animal, so it's the original 4x4 pickup truck. They can hear each other from over 60 miles away. They got big ears. They're very loud. All right, so like I drove, I think it's 53 miles to Mountaintop. That's not as a crow flies, that's back winding around. But that's still like me being heard from Mountaintop. That's a long ways, right? That's in the desert, so there's less trees, but still, that's a lot. That didn't have much to do with us, but they act stubborn because of their supposed intelligence, right? So they like to do what they think is best for themselves. That's why they're known for being stubborn. You try to pull it along. It's not going to do what you want unless it thinks it's good for itself. And I think we do that a lot. We don't do what we should do because we think we know what's best for ourselves. A lot of times we're wrong. They're very social. They need companions. They don't like to be alone. So they either need to be with other donkeys or even goats or horses. A lot of times people put them with horses. We're humans. We're social. We're not made to be alone. When God created Adam, he said afterward, it's not good for man to be alone. Then he created Eve. Hermits like me, it's people that like to be alone. It's still good to have interact with other people. And we're made to be like that. We're also made to have a relationship with our Father in heaven. And that's what our soul really longs for. Donkeys can remember things like 25 years or more. They live to be like about 50. So they'll remember places and other donkeys and stuff. So here's some verses with donkeys that, like I said, also kind of pertain to us. Some Exodus 13:13. Every firstborn of a donkey you shall redeem with a lamb. If you will not redeem it, then you shall break its neck. I was talking about all the firstborn things that were dedicated to the Lord. But, if we're not, we have a choice. Either we can be redeemed with the lamb or we will die. Those are our choices. Jesus Christ is the lamb. He died for us. He's paid for us. And if we would not be redeemed by him, then we're going to die and spend eternity in hell. Those are the two choices we have. Another verse is from Job. This is when God was talking to Job and putting Job in his place a little bit. And so he asked this rhetorical question. Who set the wild donkey free? Who loosed the bonds of the onager? The onager is a type of donkey. This is God. That's rhetorical. God set the donkey free. God's the one that takes care of the animals and that we don't take care of. But who sets us free, right? Who loosens our bonds? God loosens our bonds. Psalm 104:10-11. He sends the springs into the valleys. They flow among the hills. They gave drink to every beast of the field. The wild donkeys quenched their thirst. God provides for us. God quenches our thirst as well with living water, as well as our physical needs. Another one, this is Jesus is talking to the lawyers and the Pharisees that were opposed to everything he did, basically. And he asked this. He was about to heal somebody. He answered and said to them, saying, which of you having a donkey or an ox that has fallen into a pit will not immediately pull him out on the Sabbath day? In the story, Jesus then healed the man that was sick. God has no problem with not resting on his Sabbath day to heal us. He's restless to heal us, as it were. Moving along to some bigger stories with donkeys. You can't talk about donkeys without going to Balaam. That's a classic story, Numbers 22. And also we'll look at 1 Samuel 9 with Saul. Numbers 22, we'll go ahead and read probably a good portion of that. Then the children of Israel moved and camped in the plains of Moab on the side of the Jordan across from Jericho. Now Balak, the son of Zippor, saw that Israel had done, or what Israel had done to the Amorites. And Moab was exceedingly afraid of the people because they were so many. And Moab was sick with dread because of the children of Israel. So Moab said to the leaders of, Moab said to the leaders of Midian, now this company will lick up everything around us as an ox licks up the grass in the field. And Balak, the son of Zippor, was king of the Moabites at that time. Then he sent messengers to Balaam, the son of Beor at Pethor, which is near the river in the land of the sons of the people, of his people, to call him, saying, look, a people has come up from Egypt. See, they cover the face of the earth and are settling next to me. Therefore, please come at once and curse the people for me, for they are too mighty for me. Perhaps I shall be able to defeat them and drive them out of the land. For I know that he whom you bless is blessed, and he whom you curse is cursed. And so here's, Israel's moving up, and God is helping them defeat everyone in their way, basically. So the king of Moab is, they're getting a little afraid. They don't want to be licked up like the grass, as it says. They don't want to be defeated by Israel. So they he sends for this guy, Balaam, who and he's trying to give him, he's going to give him money to have him curse Israel, which is, you know, a prophet, really, if the prophet's speaking for God, God's the one that would be making the decision. So they had this misunderstanding. They think that the prophet is going to, like, sway God's decision as to what's going to happen to these people. But anyways, that kind of thing happened a lot. So, let's see. I just skip down a little bit. Well, no, I'll keep going. So the elders of Moab and the elders of Midian departed with the diviner's fee in their hands, and they came to Balaam and spoke to him for the words of Balak. And he said to them, "Lodge here tonight, and I will bring back word to you as the Lord speaks to me." So the princes of Moab stayed with Balaam. Then God came to Balaam and said, "Who are these men with you?" So Balaam said to God, "Balak, the son of Zippor, king of Moab, sent to me, saying, 'Look, a people has come out of Egypt, and they cover the face of the earth. Come now, curse them for me. Perhaps I shall be able to overpower them and drive them out.'" And God said to Balaam, "You shall not go with them. You shall not curse the people, for they are blessed." So Balaam rose in the morning and said to the princes of Balak, "Go back to your land, for the Lord has refused to give me permission to go with you." And the princes of Moab rose, went to Balak, and said, "Balaam refused to come with us." Well, seems like Balaam's doing pretty good so far. Seems like it. All right. Then Balak again sent princes, more numerous than before, more honorable than they. So now he's sending, you know, more money and better, more eloquent people to try to convince him. They came to Balaam and said to him, "Thus says Balak the son of Zippor, please let nothing hinder you from coming with me, for I will certainly honor you greatly, and I will do whatever you say to me. Therefore, please come, curse this people for me." Well, God had already told him no, so Balaam probably shouldn't have had to wonder. You know, God said no, but you know, he wants to know again. I know a lot of times in my life, I know there's things that God doesn't want me to do. I'll do them anyways, or maybe there's something that's like not necessarily a bad thing, but it's something that I want to try to do, and I know that it doesn't seem like God's wanting me to do that, and maybe I'll keep on trying to do it. But here, so Balaam, verse 18, "Then Balaam answered and said to the servant of Balak, though Balak were to give me his house full of silver and gold, I cannot go beyond the word of the Lord my God to do less or more. Now therefore, please, you also stay here tonight, and I may know what more the Lord will say to me." Still sounds pretty good, right? And God came to Balaam at night and said to him, "If the men come to call you, rise and go with them. But only the word which I speak to you, that you shall do." So Balaam rose in the morning, saddled his donkey, and went to the princes of Moab. So it still seems like Balaam's doing pretty good, right? And then we get to this next section, and it seems a little like there's a shift going on. But I think there's something for us to see in it. And many people have tried to say it's like a, you know, contradiction. It's not. It's just you got to read it a little bit. Then God's anger was aroused because he went. And the angel of the Lord took his stand in the way as an adversary against him. And he was riding on his donkey, and his two servants were with him. Now the donkey saw the angel of the Lord standing in the way with his sword drawn in his hand. And the donkey turned aside out of the way and went into the field. So Balaam struck the donkey to turn him back to the road. Then the angel of the Lord stood in a narrow path between the vineyards with a wall on his side and a wall on that side. And when the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, she pushed herself against the wall and crushed Balaam's foot against the wall. So he struck her again. Then the angel of the Lord went further and stood in a narrow place where there was no way to turn either to the right or to the left. And when the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, she lay down under Balaam. So Balaam's anger was aroused. He struck the donkey with his staff. Then the Lord opened the mouth of the donkey, and she said to Balaam, "What have I done to you that you have struck me these three times?" And Balaam said to the donkey, "Because you have abused me, I wish there were a sword in my hand that I would now kill you." And so, pretty crazy that the donkey could talk. Even more crazy that Balaam argued with it immediately, didn't even pause. Like, well, you know, I know better than you, donkey. So the donkey said to Balaam, "Am I not your donkey on which you have ridden ever since I became yours to this day? Was I ever disposed to do this to you?" And he answered, "No." And the Lord opened Balaam's eyes, and he saw the angel of the Lord standing in the way with his drawn sword in his hand. He bowed his head and fell flat on his face. The angel of the Lord said to him, "Why have you struck your donkey these three times? Behold, I have come out to stand against you because your way is perverse before me. The donkey saw me and turned aside from me these three times. If she had not turned aside from me, surely I would have killed you by now and let her live." I want to keep reading. Yeah, I'll keep going. Why not? Then Balaam said to the angel of the Lord, "I have sinned, for I did not know you stood in the way against me. Thou, therefore, if it displeases you, I will turn back." Then the angel of the Lord said to Balaam, "Go with the men, but only the word that I speak to you, that you shall speak." So Balaam went with the princes of Balak. We'll stop there. So, seems a little, yeah, like I said before, it seems a little strange. It seems like God was sending Balaam. God said, "Yeah, Balaam, go with his people." And now it seems like he's against him going with the people. But as we see in the end, that's not the case. Because at the end of this section, the angel of the Lord, which is Jesus, told him to go. He said, "Go and, you know, do what you said you were going to do. You said you were only going to speak for me. Go and do that," right? And so you wonder, like, why all this, like, drama? And I think we see, for one, it says verse 32, "Your way is perverse before me." All right. So even though he was going where God had told him to go, essentially, his way was perverse before him. So what in his heart, something was wrong. Something he was doing was perverse. It was the way he was doing it that was wrong. And we read in 2 Peter 2:15, it's talking about false teachers and all the things that's going on, the perversity and stuff. And he says that they are like Balaam, who loved the wages of unrighteousness. Basically, he was taking money, evil people's money, to do wrong things. The king was hiring him to curse something that God didn't curse. And so it seems like in his heart, he wasn't doing this because he understood wrong and right. He was doing it because he wanted the money. We see that God humbled him with this donkey, this lowly donkey, brought him down, and I think really taught him a lot, or God taught him a lot using the donkey. But we read, "Surely he scorns the scornful, but gives grace to the humble," in Proverbs 3:34. The word "scornful," it literally means, from what I studied, literally means to make mouths, basically like to say stuff, and it carries this thought of like arrogance, saying things we don't understand, boasting. Kind of like the word's also translated ambassador, so it'd be like someone's like, "Oh well, my country is really great," and all this other stuff. It's the same idea. It could also be like a person like, "Well, I'm all that great," and all this other stuff. It's the same kind of a thought. Saying things we shouldn't say, and I'm definitely guilty of that. But he gives grace to the humble. So 1 Timothy 1, my train of thought, a little bit scatterbrained, but what I was thinking of basically is, like, Balaam was trying to do what God wanted him to do. And there's lots of times that we try to do things that God wants us to do, and we're doing them, but we're not in the same way, not in our hearts, we're not obeying him. We're not doing it because out of love, or doing it out of whatever, self-righteousness or pride or other things. And God really cares about our motives. Paul was writing to Timothy, and in their church they were having problems with people that were basically just teaching, and it's, I don't know if they wanted the attention or they wanted to seem whatever. And they're teaching all these things they didn't understand. And we get to verse 5, and we didn't have the quiz rally, but we tried to memorize a lot of this, so I'm going to put some of those guys over there on the spot. I don't know. All right, Jer, it's for you. Now, the purpose of the commandment is? Love what? Yep, that's it. And from a? Good conscience. And from? Oh, there's some cheating going on. Sincere faith, yeah. Good job. Yeah, I know it's been a couple months. The purpose of the commandment is love. So the purpose of the commandments, the things that God, the laws God put out was, it was really, he was showing us what love is by showing us what love is not, by telling us what love is not. And we know that, you know, the greatest commandment of all is love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your mind, and all your soul. And the second is love your neighbor as yourself. All of the points of the law point us to what it means to love. And that's the purpose of the commandment. God doesn't just give us rules just to be difficult. I'm like, well, you know, I feel like I just don't want you to take stuff from your friend just because, you know, no reason other than I don't want you to do it. It just seems funny. It's because stealing is wrong. Stealing is not love. God doesn't like that. There's a purpose behind it. Even the smaller little details that seem like they're too much, or they're really almost nitpicky, as you could say. There's still very much a purpose behind every single one of those laws. God is not arbitrary. He does things for a reason. Yes, we pick up back in verse 7 of 1 Timothy 1. They're designed to be teachers of the law, understanding neither what they say nor the things which they affirm. So here's, like I was saying, it seemed like Balaam was going out doing what he thought he was going to do. He had his mindset in doing his own thing. But he didn't really understand why. He wasn't humbled. He was just kind of doing it for the money and for whatever. And God was teaching him. And I think in the same way, you know, God can use many simple, trivial things to humble us. And I know in my life, that's happened to me many times, whatever it may be. Maybe I'm driving along and, yeah, I got things figured out. You know, I can do whatever. And then my car totally breaks down. Like, well, there it is. I guess I don't have things figured out. Or whatever it might be. I mean, it's just simple things. God can humble us. Until we're humbled, it's harder for God to use us. So God sometimes just won't use us. He wants us to be humble. He cares about our motives. If we look at 1 Samuel 16:7, just that one verse. This is in reference to Samuel's going out to get David. They didn't know he was David until he sees them. Look at the sons of Jesse. I'll start in verse 6 just for context. So it was when they came that he looked at Eliab and said, "Surely the Lord's anointed is before him. But the Lord said to Samuel, "Do not look at his appearance or at his physical stature, because I have refused him. For the Lord does not see as man sees. For man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the hearts." You know, God cares about our hearts. It's easy for me I can fool you and make myself look like I'm doing good things, but God knows my heart, which is convicting because a lot of times my heart is not in the right place. God knows it. So move on to the next donkey story here. This is with Saul before he was anointed king. It's kind of a lot of the book of Samuel is kind of like this. It's like things just seem to just kind of happen, and it's like obvious that God was behind it. There was a man of Benjamin. His name was Kish, the son of Abiel, the son of Zeror. Okay, I'm going to skip some of these names. Sorry. A Benjamite, a mighty man of power. All right. And he had a choice and handsome son. His name was Saul. There was not more handsome person than he among the children of Israel. For his shoulders upward, he was taller than any of the people. Now the donkeys of Kish, Saul's father, were lost. And Kish said to his son, Saul, "Please take one of the servants with you and arise, go and look for the donkeys." So he passed through the mountains of Ephraim and through the land of Shalisha, but he did not find them. And he then passed through the land of Shalim, and they were not there. Then he passed through the land of the Benjamites, but did not find them there. And when he came to the land of Zuph, Saul said to his servants, servant who was with him, come, let us return, lest my father ceases caring about the donkeys and becomes worried about us. And he said to him, look now, there is a man of the city, there is in the city a man of God. He is honorable, he is an honorable man, and all that he says surely comes to pass. So let us go, therefore, perhaps he can show us the way that we should go. Saul said to his servant, but look, if we go, what shall we bring him? For the bread in our vessel is all gone, and there is no present to bring a man of God. What do we have? And the servant answered Saul again and said, look, I have here in my hand 1/4 a shekel of silver. I'll give that to the man of God to tell us our way. I'll skip down a couple verses. And Saul said to his servant, well said, come, let us go. So they went in the city where the man of God was. And when he had gone up the hill to the city, they met some young women sitting to drawing water and said to them, is the seer here? And they answered and said, yes, he is here just ahead of you. Hurry now, for today he came into the city because there is a sacrifice for the people today on the high place. As soon as you come into the city, you will surely find him before he goes up to the high place to eat. For the people will not eat till he comes because he must bless the sacrifice. Afterward, those who are invited will eat. Now, therefore, go up. For about this time you will find him. So there he went to the city. As they were coming out into the city, there was Samuel coming up toward them on his way up to the high place. Now the Lord said to Samuel in his ear the day before Saul came, saying, tomorrow about this time I will send you a man from the land of Benjamin, and you shall anoint him commander over my people of Israel, that he may save my people from the land of the Philistines. For I have looked upon my people because their cry has come to me. And how great is that? You know, God cares about his people and what his people wants. So when Samuel saw Saul, the Lord said to him, there he is, the man of whom I spoke to you. This one shall reign over my people. Then Saul drew near to Samuel in the gate and said, please tell me, where is the seer's house? Samuel answered and said to Saul, I am the seer. Go before me to the high place, for you shall eat with me today and tomorrow, and I will let you go and tell you all that is in your heart. But as for your donkeys that were lost 3 days ago, do not be anxious about them, for they have been found. And on whom is all your desire of Israel? Is it not on you and on your father's house? Let me skip down a little bit. Or maybe. Yes, we about the feast there. Oh, okay. Now Samuel took Saul and his servants, brought him into the hall, and had them sit in the place of honor among those who were invited. They were about 30 persons. And Saul said to the cook, bring the portions which I gave you, which I said to you, set it apart. So the cook took up the thigh with its upper part and set it before Saul. And Samuel said, here it is. This was kept back. This was apart from you. This was set apart for you. Eat, for until this time it has been kept for you since I said I invited the people. So Saul ate with Samuel that day. When they had come down from the high place to the city, Samuel spoke to Saul on the top of the house. They arose early. It was about dawning of the day that Samuel called to Saul on the top of the house, saying, get up, that I may send you on your way. And Saul arose, and both of them went outside, he and Samuel. And as they were going down to the outskirts of the city, Samuel said to Saul, tell the servant to go ahead of us. And they went on, but you stand here for a while, that it may be announced to you the word of God. And Samuel took a flask of oil and poured it over his head and kissed him and said, is it not because the Lord has anointed you commander over his inheritance? When you have departed from me today, you will find two men by Rachel's tomb in the territory of Benjamin. And they will say to you, the donkey. Yeah, they found the donkeys. Where's the part? Man. I spent like a few days trying to get ready for this, and I'm still not ready. Okay. Well, okay. That's enough. That gets the point. He's anointed king. He's anointed as commander over Israel, the Lord's inheritance. So this is like, You know, it's to be like Dave, a mighty man, sends out his choice and handsome son, Josiah. He's tall anyways, that works. Josiah is looking for Mr. Billy, the Billy Goat. And next thing you know, Josiah gets invited into this nice, maybe the president's house, the White House. And the president says, hey, sit here, eat this lobster. It was saved for you. By the way, you're going to be the next president. Pretty wild, right? He sets out to find his Billy Goat and becomes the president. That's what's kind of going on, is Saul just went out to find his donkeys, and he became the king. So here's a verse. It's kind of spoken to a little different perspective, but the idea gets across. It's in James 4:13-17. Come now. It's kind of like, come on. You who say, today or tomorrow we will go to such and such a city, spend a year there, buy and sell, make a profit, whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that. But now you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. Therefore, to him who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is sin. And it was the thought, like where my thoughts kind of were going with this, it seemed like a little bit of a disconnect, but this last verse here, 17, also seemed like a little bit of a disconnect. Him who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is sin. He just said that boasting is evil, so it didn't say if you know it's evil and you do evil, that's sin. If you know it's good and don't do it, that's sin. So my thoughts were, so here's Saul going out to do his own thing, and he wasn't really considering what God might have been doing. And I know, like in my life, I'll go out, maybe I'll go to get milk from the store. I have to get milk, you know. Go into Walmart, straight to the back, get my milk, register, I'm out. I got my milk. You know, I'm pretty proud about that. I can get milk really fast. But God can use our normal day-to-day activities to bring him glory. It seems like with this verse 17, like when we go out, we should be looking for opportunities for God to work in us. We know God has told us what good things are to do, right? They can be simple, you know. Maybe I'm in Walmart going to get my milk, and I see some lady in one of those Mart carts trying to reach up and get the last roll of toilet paper from the top shelf, and maybe I go get it for her, then I fight off the crazy mob of people trying to, you know, take it from her. Maybe I was too busy getting my milk to realize that, you know, or whatever it might be. God can work in our normal everyday life. I think if we need to have our focus on that, that's the good thing to do. And if we see a good thing to do and don't do it because we're too busy, too distracted looking for donkeys or whatever, then that's essentially sin for choosing to not do good. Look at Proverbs 16:9. It says, man plans his way, but the Lord directs his steps. We might have an idea of what we're going to do, but God's the one that's going to decide what happens. So here's also where my thoughts were going, kind of going. Proverbs 13:9, a desire accomplished is sweet to the soul, right? It's when we have something we really want and it happens, we feel pretty good, right? In general. Maybe those are bad things and they feel good and then they don't hold up over time. But if it's a good thing and it's a satisfactory thing, it's like, yeah, that's good, I like that. It's sweet to the soul. So here, Ecclesiastes, if you know, I like Ecclesiastes. Here's Solomon, super wise man. He just seemed kind of upset, kind of bitter, maybe overwhelmed or whatever. And he's just trying to find happiness. So he's going through and does everything he can think of, right? He doesn't hold anything back, he says. He tries working hard. He tries being lazy, essentially. He tries drinking a lot of wine. He tries doing good things. He tries doing whatever. He tries being rich. Tries being poor. And he says, you know, it's better to be rich because you don't go hungry, but when a rich person dies, he loses everything. It's all vanity, right? He says it a lot. It's all vanity. It's like chasing after the wind. We can chase after the wind. We can catch it in a jar, right? Put the air in a jar. We open the jar up later. There's no more wind. It's gone. Nothing there. Empty. Right? Chasing things like that. And he comes to the end. He kind of has his conclusion. After all he's done, he decides this is the thing that brings him satisfaction. This is the thing to desire, essentially. He says, "Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God, keep his commandments, for this is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil." And so that's, you know, like back to Balaam. Balaam maybe secretly in his heart was doing it for the wrong reason. God knew it. It wasn't a secret to God. We set out, you know, we're trying to do things to please God, and we let God humble us. We can let God use us. Those are the, you know, good things he'll judge us for, he says. But this is what brings us satisfaction. This is the desire we should desire that is sweet to our soul. You know, if we desire the things God desires and then God works to fulfill them, we'll feel even more satisfied with all this. So this kind of brings us back to Matthew. So seems a little scattered. Hopefully I can try to tie it together in a few minutes. So God wants us to be humble. He doesn't want us to be loud and proud. God can use the humble. God can use the simple, ordinary things. He uses this donkey in Matthew 21. The king of everything, the creator of everything, comes riding on a donkey, right? Dirty little donkey. So here's another from another gospel. It says, "On which no one had sat." All right, so like I said earlier, donkeys, like, they do what they think is best for themselves. If you just went and sat on a donkey that had never been ridden, the donkey probably wouldn't like it, wouldn't think it was good, but would probably kick you off pretty quick. This donkey wasn't trained to be ridden. Also, I said the donkeys, you had to build trust with them. So Jesus wasn't the donkey's, you know, owner in an earthly sense. So even if the donkey had been taught to ride his owner around, he probably wouldn't like some stranger sitting on him. But you know, Jesus is the master. This donkey knew what was best for him. This donkey let Jesus use him. And that's what we need to do. We need to let God use us. We don't need to be proud of ourselves because we have nothing to be proud of. We need to let Jesus use us. That's what's best for us. That's hard for me to remember, to let Jesus be in control, let God be in control. Another little point from another gospel. His disciples did not understand all these things at first, right? So, skeptics are always trying to say, like, "Oh well, these passages don't line up. Maybe they just made this up." But he didn't prearrange this because he found some passage in Zechariah. The disciples didn't know what was going on. The man that owned the donkey didn't know what was going on. So clearly, God had orchestrated this behind the scenes, and fulfilled this prophecy that they didn't even realize was being fulfilled. Like I said, God's using this lowly donkey. This passage says that there's two donkeys. There's a female donkey, you know, is the idea, a mother donkey and her colt. So the colt's the baby donkey. All right, so some people are being dumb, and they think that somehow Jesus was trying to ride both at the same time, because it says he was riding on donkeys. So it just means he was riding on the colt and he was towing the other donkey. I don't know why it's hard for some people to understand, but that's all that's going on. He's towing one donkey behind him. And some of the passages just mention the one donkey. Okay, he's just riding the one colt, so there's no problem with that from that standpoint. But kind of the main focus on this, and like I said at the beginning, like, you know, when I'm up here trying to talk to all you people, I don't feel adequate. I don't feel comfortable. And that's just the way it is. But that's kind of also the idea. You know, none of us are adequate, right? Like the world's wisdom will tell you, especially like since I've been in public school, is always, you need to build self-confidence. You need to feel better about yourself. Nowadays they say, well, confidence is key, right? That's the big thing, is confidence is key. Like, or fake it till you make it. You know, pretend like you know what you're doing, and eventually you'll be good at it. That's not wisdom. Sorry, it's just not wisdom. If you're going to be confident, you're going to fake it, and something you don't understand, like I said earlier, that's, you know, the word for a scoffer, the word making mouths. You're making up stuff. It's just being arrogant, pretending you're good at something that you're not, which I do all the time. I'm not accusing anybody but myself. When I pretend like I'm good at things that I'm not, or speak like I know what I'm talking about, that's just arrogance. It's not a good thing. So how can we be used of God? The sacrifices of God are broken spirits, a broken and a contrite heart. These, O God, you will not despise. And so God will do things to humble us because he wants us to be humble so he can use us. It's really hard to give any sort of message on pride without sounding prideful, I feel like. I'm not saying that I have arrived and I've achieved this. If I had said that, then I would be lying and wrong. I pray God would humble me more. And I would like to be used by God. Like I said, that's what will bring us satisfaction in life, is if we humble ourselves before God and let God use us. So that's the end. Hope somebody learned something. I feel like I learned a little bit from reading God's word, so I'll leave it at that.